For this game, I feel like my entire life, because this past week has been like the longest week in history. So this week, actually, speaking of Seahawks, there was this test. Did you guys see this test going around online? It was like, which Seahawks player are you? And I was like, obviously I'm Russell Wilson, right? I'm hot. Nah, just kidding. Buff? No, but I'd like to think I am. Short? Yes, kind of. Really good at football? No. But I still am Russell Wilson. And so I was like, I'm going to take this test, and I'm going to be Russell Wilson. I know it. I'm going to be the most loved man in Seattle. So I took this test, and I'm Golden Tate. And if you guys know anything about Golden Tate, all you have to know is he was like, uh-uh. He was like taunting the other team. I was like, that is not me at all. Are you kidding me? So I was Golden Tate, and you guys know Nicole. She's one of our 11th and 12th grade group life leaders. So she's a very vocal person. She's very loud. She can be very loud. And we're like, you're totally Richard Sherman. And she took the test, and she was Richard Sherman. I was like, oh, that is so awesome. I think Steve Hendricks was Earl Thomas, which is pretty awesome. And so I'm really excited. Like, my mind is just everywhere right now because I'm so excited for this game. But before we get to the game, we're in the last day of a series right now called One Thing. And so the last couple weeks, Kyle and Gary, we've been talking about if there's one thing that we can do this year in our lives, that's get into this guy. And if you don't know what this is the Bible. And it's pretty important to church. And so if there's one thing that we can do this year, it's get into this guy a lot more and start learning about it and applying it in our lives a lot more. And so we've been talking about that, and it's really cool. I feel like one thing that I don't know, maybe it's just me, but a lot of people think is that people that work at churches, pastors and stuff, that they have it all together. I just feel like that kind of stereotype goes around where like, oh, you work for church, you must read your Bible every day, and you must pray for like 7 hours a day and all this stuff. And the fact of the matter is that it's not true. We don't have it all together. And I think for me, this series, One Thing, has been so cool for me just because it's been an eye-opener for me specifically. If you know me, and if you get to know me, then you know that I'm a creature of habit. So I love being in a routine every single day. I thrive when I can just do the exact same thing every day. Like, I worked at McDonald's and flipping burgers and putting them into the tray. That was me. I was awesome at it. And so that's who I am. I'm a creature of habit. And so all of high school and probably even junior high, I felt like every single school day I did the exact same thing. You know, I'd wake up, and I'm not a nice person in the morning. My mom and dad are here. They can probably attest to that I am unpleasant before 10 a.m. And so I'd wake up, pull my board of That wasn't even a word. Pour my bowl, that's what I meant to say, of Fruit Loops, eat my Fruit Loops, drive to school, you know, do the school thing, eat my mom packed me a lunch every single day. So I had like turkey sandwich and apples and carrots and water and usually some kind of little treat that my mom threw in there. And so I'd have that every day, go through the school thing, put on my little short shorts after school, go for a run, come home, mom cooked me dinner, she still does, and do my homework and go to bed. Like, that was my routine. I was in such a routine that I knew what to do every single day, and I thrived off of that. And then I graduated. And then I started hanging out with Gary. And that's when things went downhill for me. So, after I got into college and stuff, like, I bounced around to a couple different schools, and I started getting out of this routine. Like, I stopped running because I didn't have, like, a specific time each day to run. And I felt, like, confused for, like, 3 years. I was like, what am I doing? I'm living in this like weird state. And so I finally kind of got used to it. But what I realized is that I can't get into, since I'm not in a routine, that my Bible reading was hurting. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. For me, each week, it's like the same, it's kind of the same day. I wake up and I work. So it's really easy for me on those days to read my Bible. But then there's four other days in the week. There's Monday and there's Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Yep, got them. And so there's those other 4 days, and I don't have the same routine. Like, I have a girlfriend, and we hang out. I have a lot of different friends that I like to hang out with. Go watch games with my dad, Seahawks games and Huskies games. And so there's like, a lot of different things that pull me out of this routine. And so those other 4 days of the week, I really struggle sometimes to find a time to read my Bible. You know, I'd say average week, two of those 4 days, I remember. And the other days, I just forget. And so it's been really cool to see this one thing. If there's one thing that I can change in my life, even though I work at a church, is that I can get into my Bible those other days of the week. And so I just want to share you that with you guys, that this is for all of us, not just you guys sitting in chairs. And so from that, if you know another thing about me, then you know I love to go hiking. I love the outdoors. I love all that stuff. And I don't get to go often because my favorite place is, it's Paradise at Mount Rainier. You guys have probably been there before. It's a pretty popular place. And so I love going up to Mount Rainier and going hiking. And so one day this summer, my friend Ryan Maxfield, he's the giant that you see walking around. He's like 7'2", I think, right? 7'2"? Yeah. He's the giant guy you see walking around here. He was like, hey, let's go on an adventure. And some of you are giggling because, you know, when Ryan Maxfield says, let's go on an adventure, it's not like, yeah, let's just go, like, walk in the park or something. It's like, one time, literally, he said this. He's like, do you guys want to go to the Port of Tacoma and try and steal a ship? Like, obviously, he wasn't, like, 100% serious, but that's what an adventure is, and he still wants to do that. So he was like, let's go on an adventure, and, you know, I'm kind of like, eh. And so we're like, let's go on a night hike. And that sounds pretty cool. We went on a night hike. So what we did is we packed up at like 9 o'clock at night, and it was in August, and so we went up to this place called Comet Falls. It's this really cool, like, 300-foot waterfall. You hike up to it, and it's really, really awesome. And actually, funny story about that. I was talking to a guy like 2 weeks ago, and he told me that there's bears and cougars there. And we went hiking there at night. So we hiked up there. There's like 10 of us, so we were safe, and especially with these guys right here. And psych. And so we hike up this Comet Falls, and we're up at the top. And I remember seeing the waterfall, and I was like, that's pretty cool, but it's really dark. And then you look up, and you just see stars everywhere. And if you look up in a Puyallup night, it's horrible. You see like 10 stars and the moon. You can barely see the moon because the lights from the city wash it out. But then you get up to Comet Falls, and there's no city lights at all. And so you just look up, and there's like millions of stars, it feels like, and you just see them everywhere. And I remember when I got up there, I looked up, and I got this thing. I like to call them dizzy moments, and it sounds like I have some kind of, like, maybe a disease, but I don't. When something, like, blows my mind, like, then I get dizzy. And so I know it's weird. It sounds weird. But, like, I looked up, and I was like, whoa, this is awesome. And so I had this dizzy moment, like, this is blowing my mind. This is so cool. This is so crazy. I can't wrap my mind around this. And I get these dizzy moments a lot when I think about God. When I think about, like, who God is, where he came from, like, wait, what? He's always been there? Like, there's no, God doesn't have time. It's eternal. I like get dizzy. I'm like, I need to sit down right now. And I'm serious. It happens. And so I open up my Bible a lot, and I find myself having these moments. Like, I don't actually get dizzy when I'm reading my Bible, but I find these moments where I read a story, and I'm like, Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead? Like, how crazy is that? And I think the fact that the Bible has so many of these crazy, crazy, dizzy moment stories in them makes a lot of people think this thing isn't true. Like, there's a lot of weird, crazy stuff in here, and it's a lot of made-up, like, Disneyland fairy tale stuff. And honestly, that's a fair thing to say, I think. For somebody that's never walked into church before, somebody that's never learned about Jesus before, I think that's fair to say, because if I walked in here for the first time and you told me that Jesus took 5 loaves of bread and fed 5,000, I'd be like, wait, what? So did he, like, microscopically cut the bread up? How does that work? And it's a fair question. But the thing is that there's a lot of evidence that can help us show that the Bible is, in fact, true, that we can actually trust the Bible. And that's what I want to focus on today on our last day of this series is, can we trust the Bible? You know, if I'm going to stand up here, if Gary's going to stand up here and Kyle's going to stand up here and say, one thing this year is we're going to get into this, then I better be able to stand up here and say, this thing is 100% true, every single word of it. And so that's what we're going to do today, is I'm going to ask you guys, and you can ask me the question, can I trust the Bible? And so the secular world, the world outside of the church, outside of Christianity, is going to tell you that there's a lot of crazy stuff in there. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff that it's hard to wrap your mind around, and it might be false. But the thing is that we have history books at school that have the same amount of, just about the same amount of evidence that we do for the Bible. And I learned a lot this week from writing this talk, and so I think it's really cool that today I want to share with you guys some different evidence, physical evidence that we have that this guy right here is actually something that we can trust. And so if you're taking notes today on your little note sheet, your first fill-in is going to be a very big word. I didn't realize that, but it's archaeological evidence proves that the Bible can be trusted. And I'm not even going to try. I can barely say that word. I'm surprised I said that. But archaeological evidence can help us see that the Bible can be trusted. So what I want you guys to do is, actually, no, I'm going to tell you about this game we play, actually. So when I hang out with friends, we don't always just do crazy stuff like steal ships. We like to play games. And we play. Some of you have played, like, Fishbowl and what? No, we're not going to talk about that game. We play crazy games. And the one game that we play occasionally is called Telephone Pictionary. So here's how this game works. Everybody sits in a circle, and they get a piece of paper and a pen. And then you have the chance at the top of the page to write a sentence, and it can be anything. And then what you do is you pass the piece of paper once you write your sentence to the person to your left, and then they look at your sentence and read it, and they draw a picture. And then the next person, well, you fold it over. Next person looks at the picture, draws a sentence, and then you just keep passing it. Picture, write a sentence, what you think it is, picture. And so it just goes like that. And the thing is that when it gets all the way back around to you, the sentence is never anything close, okay? One time I wrote, like, some stupid phrase, like, the cat jumped over the moon. That was my first sentence. And it goes around the circle, and it gets back. And for some reason, my friends had some weird fetish with this night, but they were like, Jordan pees his pants. I was like, how do you get that from the cat jumped over the moon? And the point of it all is that the further away from me this paper gets, the more people that copy it down and write it down, the more distorted it gets, the more untrue the original statement becomes. And this can happen sometimes as we're looking at historical documents. Because back in the day, they didn't have MacBook Pro 4.0, 2.6, OS X 27. They didn't have that back then. They didn't have audio recorders, video recorders, typewriters. Way back in the day, they didn't have this stuff. So the way that they had to share all these stories was they had to write it down. And they had to, like, tell people about it. And so when you think about it, over time, paper is going to go bad. Like, it gets crinkled up, and I eat it and lick it. And it just gets messed up. And so as time goes by, somebody has to copy it down. And they have to write down what they read, what that person reads. And sometimes they have to transfer it between languages, and it just can get really, really crazy. And so there's two guys, and I learned about them in history class. My dad's probably going to be disappointed because I don't remember exactly what they did. But there was a guy named Aristotle and a guy named Plato. And let's not talk about what they did because that's not important today. But the thing that's important about them is that they lived a long, long, long time ago. And so they had to write down, like, their research or whatever they did. They had to write it down. And, gosh, it just makes me cringe thinking about it. They had to write it down. And then eventually the paper and stuff would get old. And so somebody else would have to copy it. And so eventually history goes on and history goes on. And we have to go back and find these documents that they wrote. And so a crazy thing about this is that these guys that we learn about in history class, that I probably learned about in my dad's history class, and forgot about, sorry, Dad, is that archaeologists have found copies of the originals, so the originals that these guys wrote. They found copies of them that are dated to like 700 to 1450 years after the originals were written. So they don't have those originals, but they have copies that have been like 700 to 1450 years old. And so you think about it, that's a long time for copying and transferring, and things could get distorted. But we go to school, and our history teacher says this is true, or our science teacher says that what you're reading right here, what, these copies that we have, this is true. And so we learn about that. But the thing is that we have evidence from the Bible that's actually younger than what we've found for some of these guys. And so I want to tell you about three different pieces of artifacts that we have found. The first one is the Dead Sea Scrolls. And some of you have probably found them. We found them by the Dead Sea, which don't vacation there because I don't think that that sounds good. Anyways, so the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found these, and they had portions of the Bible, different writings in them, and they dated these writings to within about 500 or so years of when the originals were written. So that's still younger than what we learned about in history class with these guys, Aristotle and Plato. Like, that's still closer. And it gets even better because they found New Testament manuscripts. So the New Testament is the second half of the Bible. They found manuscripts of the New Testament that are dated to about 300 years after the originals were written. So we're closing the gap, the copying, only about 300 years. And then, to top it all off, they found portions of the book of John, little fragments of it, that are dated to be copies from within 40 years of when the originals were written. So they have these originals that were written back then. This isn't something that somebody made up down the road. These are things that were written in the time that the Bible says that they were written. And so those are some like document evidence that we have, physical evidence that we have that the Bible can be trusted. There's also some different artifacts that have been found. And so in the Bible, there's this guy named Solomon, Old Testament. And for a while there were some guys that were like, nope, he didn't live in the Old Testament. He didn't live in the time that your Bible says he did. And it says he had horses, but he definitely didn't have horses because they only had camels then. So I lost my train of thought on that one. I should have done that. So they were like, your Bible must be false because obviously that guy didn't live when you said he did. And so done. You guys, Christianity, false. But the thing about it is that they found artifacts. And they found artifacts that showed that Solomon did in fact live when it says he did in the Bible. And to make it better, they found hundreds and hundreds of horse stables. And so they're like, okay, the Bible proved itself right in that situation. And then one other last piece of physical evidence I want to share with you guys is these guys named the Hittites. And so I'm going to read you guys a verse out of Genesis, chapter 23, verse 20. And it says, so the field and the cave were transferred from the Hittites to Abraham for use as a permanent burial place. And so that doesn't have any significant meaning other than I wanted to show you that in the Bible, it says the Hittites. It says that word, okay? And so for a while there, they didn't have any other records of these guys. Nobody else knew what was going on here with these guys. And so, again, they're like, well, it says that in the Bible, but we can't find evidence of them. And so, like, it must be false. And so I can imagine it this way. Some little kid's, like, digging in a sandbox in his backyard somewhere over wherever they found these people. And he's like, "Kong, oh, what is this?" And they found the Hittites. And yet again, the Bible proved itself to be true. And it's so cool that we're able to have this physical evidence that shows us that this was not something that somebody made up down the road, that this Bible is something that was written when it says it was written. And so not only does archaeological evidence show that the Bible is true, but also scientific evidence shows that the Bible is true. That's going to be your next villain, is that scientific evidence helps to prove that the Bible can be trusted. So, if I tried to write the Bible right now, I was trying to think about this. I would probably mess up because I have a lot of things that they didn't have back then, okay? So, if I tried to forge the Bible right now, I would be like, so Peter woke up one day and he jumped in his Audi R8 and he drove over to Jesus and he was like, yo, homie, like, you want to hang out today? You want to chill? And that's what my Bible would be like because that's what I'm used to. That's how, like, you guys talk. And so that's what I'm used to. But the thing about the Bible is that the technology and the scientific evidence that's in it is actually current and it's consistent with other historical writings about that time. So there isn't anything crazy in the Bible like John defied gravity or anything like that. There isn't anything crazy. It's all consistent with what was known at this time period. And just a little looking at the Greeks, like the ancient Greeks, they used to think that the world was held up by this guy named Atlas. So they thought that like a person was kind of holding the world up, and obviously it isn't. And then the Hindus also thought that the earth was on the back of an elephant or like being held up by an elephant. It's so like every time elephant moved, there was an earthquake, and it got really crazy. But the thing about it is they have all that, and obviously now with scientific evidence, we've seen that that isn't true. There isn't a huge elephant holding the world up. But the Bible, it doesn't say like, oh, the orbital gravitational pull of the sun is holding the earth into motion. I don't know, Josh Wiley can explain it. But the Bible doesn't say all this crazy lingo that they didn't know at the time. It's just consistent with what they knew about science at the time. And so that's another way that we really see that the Bible can be trusted, is the fact that it's just consistent with what was going on. But the thing about this physical evidence, scientific evidence, archaeological evidence, the thing about it is that it's cool, but nothing can compare to the evidence we have from the changing power that the Bible has on our lives. Once we start to live out what's inside of this book and allow it to change us, that's when we see that every single word in here can be trusted. And so I want to read you guys a verse from the book of James. And it's in chapter 1, verse 21 through 22. It says, So get rid of all the filth and evil in your lives, and humbly accept the word God has planted in your hearts, for it has the power to save your souls. But don't just listen to God's word. You must do what it says. Otherwise, you're only fooling yourselves. So underline, but don't just listen to God's word. You must do what it says. When we start to live out the words that are written on the pages of the Bible, that's when we truly know that the Bible can be trusted. When we allow God to be active in our lives, when we allow him to change who we are through what is said in the Bible, that's when we really see that this thing can be trusted, just because the power that God has is so crazy. And so in high school, I was into, like, I liked money. So I wasn't, like, really into, like, oh, let's make millions of dollars. I wasn't that kind of person, but I was like, I need to have a consistent level of money. I need to be comfortable, and I need to make sure that I have a backup plan. So I was really focused on, like, what career can I do to make a good amount of money, to have good savings and all this stuff. So I was really focused on that. So from the time I got a job, I remember I would just save money. Like, my mom can probably attest to the fact that I wore holes a lot that had, like, or holes? I wore holes. I wore clothes that had holes in the armpits and stuff because I would just wear it out. I didn't like buying clothes. I was like, that's such a waste of money. Who buys clothes? And I didn't spend money on pretty much anything. And so I was like, I got to save. And then I started looking for a career. I was like, I got to find something that pays pretty well, but, you know, I don't want to have to go to school for too long. And so I was looking, like, what can make a good amount of money? What can have me set up for life? And then I read a verse in the Bible, and it completely, completely changed the way I felt about money. And it's now my favorite verse in the entire Bible, and it's Hebrews 13:5. It says, don't love money. It's pretty straightforward. Don't love money. Be satisfied with what you have. For God has said, I will never fail you, and I will never abandon you. So a few years ago, 2-3 years ago, I decided I needed to live this out. I needed to let this verse, this one verse, change my heart, change who I am. And so I was like, all right, I like music. I like hanging out with you guys. I was like, I'm going to go into ministry. I'm going to make that choice. I'm going to give up whatever career I was looking for, and I'm going to go into ministry. And if you know anything about ministry, you don't exactly make millions or hundreds of thousands. You don't make tons of money. It's just the way it is. And so I was like, wait, so God, you want me to make a lot less money? Okay, I can probably make that work. And then it gets better, because then God's like, oh, so you're getting a paycheck now? It's like, okay, so tithe now. And tithing is giving back from our paycheck. And so I was like, wait, God, so you're asking me to make less money, and out of that less money I'm making, you're asking me to give you more money back. And I was like, okay, this is not going to go well. And so it freaked me out for a while. I was like, this is really scary for me. But eventually, I started trusting God. And I really focused on those words that it says, I will never fail you, and I will never abandon you. I really focused on that. And I was like, okay, God, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to give you back this money, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just going to trust you. And it's been so cool for me to see how God has, he's always done that. He has never failed me, and he has always been there for me. You know, I think of any time where I've gotten even close to having a financial need, I've seen, like, a situation, you know, 3 years ago I got the opportunity to coach. And so God was like, here's an opportunity where you can get paid to do something that you love to do, and that's running and coaching. And so I've just seen over and over again with money how I've made this decision to trust God and allow the Bible to change me. And I can trust him back because I see that the way he works in my life, it's so cool. And I see that around here a lot at this church. When I came here 4 years ago, it completely changed the way I thought about church. I had no idea what it was like here. And it's been so cool that this is a place where anybody can come in and sit. Anybody is welcome to come. No matter if you've gone to church your whole life and you haven't found God or you have found him, no matter if you've ever stepped in your foot in a church before, this is a place for you. And through that, through those different faces, through these different people I've met, I've seen a lot of different life change come from the Bible. And, I think, too, you guys have probably seen the testimony videos that we've shown. We showed Evans a couple weeks ago, and we've seen Mavericks, and we've seen Rachel's. And so I just think about who they are and where they were in their lives, the stories that they tell me. And then it's just, like, mind-blowing to me how they, through all that they've been through, said, all right, God, I'm going to trust what you have to say. I don't know what's going to happen with my life. I'm not sure where I'm going to go, but I'm going to trust you. And it's been so cool. I mean, like, Maverick was up here singing today, and that's so cool. 2 years ago, he would probably tell you he wouldn't have been up there. And just to see that the way the Bible works in people's lives, that's what allows you to trust it, is that changing power that the Bible has on our lives. And so for you, sitting in your chair today, for each and every single person in this room, how are you going to let God change your life? What are you going to take from this book right here and allow it to change you so that you can trust what it has to say? And so if you flip your note sheets over on the back, I left you a little space. And it says, I need to work on blank. And it's going to be different for every single person in the room. For some of you guys, it's going to be lying. For some of you, it's going to be cheating, stealing, lust. There's a lot of different things that we all struggle with. And you're not alone. Know that you're not alone at all. And so what I want you to do is, you don't have to do it right now, but you can, is think about, what in my life am I struggling with? What am I going through that's really bringing me down, making me feel depressed, sad, hurt, angered? What is that one thing in my life? And then write it on that sheet. And what I want you to do is go home and do this. And this is going to sound really weird, kind of funny, but go on google.com, y'all know what that is, and type in Bible verses on blank. Whatever you wrote down on that sheet. On Google, just do it. Bible verses on blank. And so one of the first few links you're going to have, they're going to come up, and there's going to be a bunch of verses that will pop up. And you'll be able to read through all these. And what I want you to do is just find one verse. Just one. You don't have to read the entire Bible. Just one verse right now to start that has to do with what you're dealing with. Write it down on a piece of paper. Print it off. Put it on your steering wheel. Wherever you're going to see it every day, just focus on this one verse for a month. And say, all right, God, in my prayers, I'm going to say, God, here's one verse. I want you to change me through what you have to say. And allow that verse to change who you are. You know, because, like we talked about earlier, I think it's so cool that there is actually physical evidence that the Bible is real, that we actually have the stuff we can hold and see that shows us that this can be trusted. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that when you start letting the Bible change you and work in your life, you see the power of God, and you see who he is, and that's really when you can stand there and you can say, I can trust what's in that Bible. And so as I'm wrapping it up here, as I'm finishing up, we have group life starting this week. And if you don't know what group life is, it's our small groups. So we take church from Sunday mornings and we take it into a smaller setting. We meet with like groups anywhere from 10 to 20 different people. And what we do, like my group, I meet with the 9th and 10th graders. They're awesome. And we hang out, we eat snacks, we play foosball. And then we, at the end, like last half hour or so, we just hang out. We sit in a circle, we break into small groups, and we talk about God. We just talk about our lives, we talk about different questions that we have. And so this week at Group Life, it's starting on Tuesday, or Saturday, by the way. This week at Group Life, we're going to recap this one thing series. So we're just going to talk about it, debrief about it, ask any questions you have. And so on the back of your note sheet, there's one more blank for you. And this is your little take-home for you, is if you have any questions about God, any questions about the Bible, if you're doubting the Bible, if you have anything that's just blocking your relationship from God or from you getting to know him better, write it down. Write it down on that piece of paper. Because you don't sit in math class, well, hopefully you don't, sit in math class and watch them do a problem on the board and be confused and not ask a question. You ask questions to get to know things better. And so in order to get to know this better and this guy named God better, you got to ask some questions. And then doubting, I want to address this real quick. Doubting the Bible for where you are right now, it's okay if you have doubts about it. I've had doubts about the Bible before. But, you know, there were guys in the Bible that they saw Jesus perform miracles and they doubted some of the things. But you're not going to get any.